We're like the worst version of E, like right. Hollywood news.
Remember 20 years ago when John Stamos married? Yeah. All right. It's July 5th here in these United States. Day after July 4th. Oddly enough.
It's impressive. Your math skills are
thanks,
undaunted.
Because math. It's on Taking Pictures. It is Wednesday. Sorry, we took the day off. Yeah. And enjoyed the celebration of what, 214 years? No, what is it? What's my math?
Well, it would be far more than 214. It'd be 224 plus 17, which is 241. Is that right? Because it's 77.
Yeah, 241. Right? I was dyslexic. 214, 241, whatever it took.
Yeah, I played that the other day because Mr. Mom is on Netflix now.
Right.
I fast-forwarded right to that scene.
Yeah, oh, so great.
220, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
Yeah. All right, yes. So it is on Taking Pictures. It is it's Wednesday. Jesus, it feels weird to say it's Wednesday.
It's all right.
Bill Wadman in Brooklyn.
Yep.
And Jeffrey Sidoris in Silver Spring.
Yep.
So what did you end up doing?
Man, I had a bang up weekend. Saturday we slept all day, which was lovely. Sunday we spent the entire day in Prospect Park with a bunch of friends. We were there for like 6 or 7 hours.
Wow.
Playing frisbee and mm-hmm. bocce ball.
Right.
And then Saturday we went out to visit our Brit friends in New Jersey at their new house. Yesterday we went to a friend's house and then we watched a movie in the evening and yeah, went around, did stuff. It was beautiful.
Good.
Very relaxed. It was what the, you know, 4th of July is supposed to be. Friends and family and America.
America.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had some friends in from California.
Yeah.
Some of Fielding's friends. So we met up with them on Friday, went to Air and Space, and on Saturday.
Can't get enough of Air and Space.
Yeah, I went to Air and Space, and then they went on to do, they went on to Lincoln, and I went to the Hirshhorn to see the Ai Weiwei exhibit.
Yeah.
Right. Which is really cool. It's really, really neat. I like it much more than I liked the Kusama exhibit. And then spent some time with Mr. de Kooning. They have five or six pieces in the Master's Gallery, and it just, I can't get enough of him.
Very cool.
Such good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then yesterday we watched I Am Not Your Negro.
Which I keep meaning to watch.
I cannot recommend this film enough.
Okay.
I cannot recommend it enough. Admittedly, I knew very, very little about Mr. Baldwin. Really terrific film, powerful film. And what I was impressed with the most, I think, first of all, Samuel Jackson's narration is terrific, and it's unlike anything he's done, because he doesn't yell once throughout the whole thing. But watching James Baldwin speak on, either on the Dick Cavett Show or in the lecture, the footage of lectures, he is such an articulate speaker in the moment.
Yeah, he has massive poise.
Yeah, and there's, you know, I tend to kind of stammer and collect my thoughts and go silent for a few moments while I figure out how to say how I want to say something, and even then probably screw it up. Whereas listening to James Baldwin speak and listening to his writings as spoken word, it makes me want to go read some of this stuff because it is incredibly powerful and it is incredibly well written and well spoken.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can't recommend it enough. Really well done film. They had a showing at the African American History Museum, which I can't imagine how amazing that must have been. To see, you know, this subject matter in that space, you know, a lot of it's really, look, it's not our finest hour as human beings.
Sure.
But very well worth a watch if you get the chance to see it.
Yeah. It's on my queue. It's going to be good.
What else did I see? Oh, I started watching The Night Manager, too. Have you seen this?
Oh, with what's his name?
Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie, and, yeah. What's the guy?
Hugh Laurie is terrifying.
Hiddleston.
Tom
Hiddleston.
Yeah. Hugh Laurie is pretty terrifying in that show.
So far, I'm only on episode two. I just finished episode two, but...
He plays a good bad guy.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very well done. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, well done. You should watch that too. All right, so what do we got on queue this week? I mean, we got lots of stuff on queue, but you know, where do you want to start?
Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
It should be easier to resize a document in InDesign than it really is.
Oh, like so if you have a 8x10, you want to go down to a 4x5 or whatever, that kind of thing?
It should be a lot easier, and it's a mess.
There's no way to change... If you change the page size, it doesn't give you an option to sort of shrink everything down.
You can use in CC, you can use the page tool, which lets you apply like some different liquid layout rules, but it's terribly inconsistent from page to page.
Interesting.
Some pages it scales everything beautifully, and you know, I'm going to a different aspect ratio. I originally did the thing as an iPad document. And I want to go to, if I keep it at 6x8 inches as a print size, then right. Same aspect ratio. But the more common size close to that range is 5.5x8.5, okay. Which is a slightly different aspect ratio and gives me a little like a chin and a forehead kind of at the top and bottom. And in some of the sizing, it keeps everything centered and scales lovely. In other things, it moves everything it flushes the left side of the page to the center of the page. Like it flushes the left side of the content to the center of the page. In other ones, it moves the guides that are on the master pages. There's no consistency to how it works.
So you're doing this because it would be cheaper to print that way, or somebody requested it, or you just kind of have been looking around at other books and decided?
I like that aspect ratio. It's basically the same size as a Moleskine.
Okay. Sure.
And I like it. If I can have it printed at 6x8, that's going to be my preference, because then it's printed as I designed it. I don't have to change any type. I don't have to change, you know, widths or heights of any of the diagrams or photographs or anything. And it shouldn't be a big deal. I mean, I can, you know, you can print it at any size you want, really.
Right.
You know, some of the places, like if you go look at Blurb, for example, they've got a set of fixed sizes and aspect ratios that they will print at. So I don't know, it's just kind of a pain in the ass. It's been really frustrating to work with, not surprisingly.
You know, okay, wait, this is actually a good intro to an impromptu topic.
Yep.
Have tools, creative tools, actually improved in the last 10 years? You know, like
not as much as you mean software tools?
Yeah. Software.
I don't think they have improved as much as the hardware has improved.
Okay. Which is ironic, because usually people say that the opposite should be happening, right?
Or has been happening. I mean, they're not, in many cases, they're not as intuitive. The tools aren't as intuitive as they could, or maybe even should be.
Right.
And part of that, I think, is to do with legacy. I mean, you've got, in the same way that we've talked about Windows 10, for example, is, right. You know, on the surface, it looks beautiful and shiny and brand new, but you don't have to go very far to see dialog boxes that look like they're from Windows XP.
Sure.
Or functionality that looks like it's from Windows 3.1.1, right?
Right.
And in the same way, you know, Photoshop and the whole CC suite, you know, has this shiny new sort of production ready interface. But when you get down to it, it's still kind of kludgy in the way that some things are handled, and they haven't changed since version 3.
Right. And I have been using for the last few years, I've been using Photoshop CC 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I have the suite, I actually choose to go back to the old version.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
just because the interface elements are a little smaller, so it takes up, the Chrome takes up a little less space. Mm-hmm. And the, when you click on certain things, there's like certain little things that change differently, or where the focus is on the page, so that you can use keyboard commands and it knows what you're talking about, have shifted a little bit sometimes.
Sure.
So I go to fill a mask and it's not selected, or it, instead of, you know, I hit command delete or whatever, and instead of filling the mask, it chooses to delete the number I have in the, you know, hue saturation layer or whatever. It's like, right, no, I'm not actually, you know what I mean? Like, I was filling the mask. I've already changed what I want to change. Now just close the mask. So
you're not alone, Bill. I actually know quite a few people who have gone back to previous generations of Adobe software in particular.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
The funny thing is that the other day I think I had 2017 installed on this machine and 2014, and I chose the wrong drop-down box in Capture One when I was exporting it as a TIFF, and it went into 2017, and I just started playing with it. And there's a, the Liquify tool in 2017 has this crazy facial recognition tool. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Where it actually gives you, it knows where the person's right eye is, and you can change the size and shape of the eye and open it a little bit and whatever. Like, basically it has sort of semi-smart sliders in there to know what is on the screen and what to change when you slide the slider, which I could imagine if you were doing a lot of this stuff, it being very handy. But
sure.
You know, but at the same time, I'm like, man, but I still have all those other annoying things. So at what point am I kicking myself because there are better tools out there and I'm not using them because I'm acting like a Luddite or whatever, you know?
Right. But
there is this question of, you know, has this stuff improved? And I don't know that it has all that much. Certainly not by leaps and bounds. Yeah. I remember when every new version came out of any of our software programs you and I use, where it would be like, oh my God, got to get the new one.
Right. Right.
You know, the new one's got all this great stuff, you know?
And then it didn't.
Yeah, or it doesn't for us. Maybe it does for other people who are up to snuff on what's coming out now. You know, I don't know.
I think there are some outliers that are producing good stuff. I've been enjoying the Affinity products, both Photo and Designer.
Yep.
And they do things, some of the things they do in the same way, some of the things they do a little differently. And we tend to, when we try a new tool, if it doesn't work the same way that the tool we've used for years, maybe even for decades before, our first response is always, or not always, but is often, this isn't good, or I like the old one better.
Yeah.
But is it just that we're used to that? You know, I've spent the last year or so getting used to the Affinity products, I've come around to, there are a few things that I go, wow, that actually does feel a little better. That actually does seem like it takes a few less processor cycles or a few less keystrokes or whatever it is to get from A to B.
Yeah. Once you get used to it and figure out their way.
Yeah. Once you get used to it. Yeah. And I would imagine it's that way for cameras as well. And for the hardware of, you know, well, this button's now in this position or, you know, now it does things this way instead. So I don't know. It's hard to quantify whether they're objectively better, or are we so mired in the subjective use case that we can't see it, you know?
Yeah, sure. And there's also the sort of the issue of backward compatibility for files you have, you know, like I use adjustment layers all over my things.
Sure.
If I've got adjustment layers on stuff from a year ago and I don't have Photoshop anymore because I'm using Affinity, and I open it up and now I can't go back and re-edit old stuff, you know? So it's like, you get stuck in this compatibility thing too, which is also a small problem. And then if you're passing files between people and it's sort of the, well, go with the industry standard kind of thing, you know? So
and I think that you just brought up is a very valid point. If there's a different use case, if you're a solo photographer or artist and you're the only one that touches your work,
And you're not the kind of person who goes back a lot. You know?
Yeah. And you've got a little more freedom to maybe, you know, try the latest, greatest, or to integrate a new workflow or a new application. But if you are sharing with service bureaus or other clients or other team members, then you do have to worry about, you know, if everybody's using Word and you're using OpenOffice, well, okay.
Life can become painful.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a little bit like what it is with, like, I tried Affinity Photo and I edited some stuff in it a few weeks ago, and it was much better than the betas a few years ago. Certainly more than usable for what I need.
Sure.
But I have 10 or 12 years of pictures that are in a different format, and
there's that legacy compatibility. Sure.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if I had to, sure, but like, is that a good choice? I don't know, you know. But yeah, for an individual person who's working on stuff and finishes their images and moves on, or is okay with moving forward that way, absolutely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Still $39?
Yeah, I think $39 for
stupid cheap.
And then I think the iPad version is still on sale. And the iPad version, from what I have seen, I have not purchased it because I only have a mini, and you need the full size iPad to use it.
You but need a Mac
from what I've seen, it looks pretty spectacular, and it's pretty close to feature complete to the desktop versions.
Yeah,
from what I understand.
My whole thing with the iPads is just, how do I get stuff on there and off there? How do I back it up?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the big problem. If you had a way for me to plug a hard drive or an SSD into the bottom of the iPad, and I could just suck all that stuff off into a HFS Plus, or, you know, an APFS partition.
I wonder if that will change with iOS 11 going to a proper file structure or a file system.
Because going up and down to the cloud with 60 gigabytes worth of photos
is not
an option.
It's I mean, if you could have a file system in place and then a USB-C port on the bottom of the thing where you could just pop in a drive, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, but that's changing the whole way that OS works, how it thinks, you know. It's it's so frustrating. Will that be how it is eventually, or will online services and internet connections get fast enough to where uploading 60 gigs is not a problem to some sort of crazy online thing, and that's the way we do the conversion? I don't know, maybe. I don't know. All right. Where do you want? We got a bunch of news things on here. Where do you want to start?
Well, what is this? I thought we talked about.
We
St.
did
Helens
talk about that,
week.
Didn't we?
I thought we did. Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Well, all right. So that can go away. So Mount St. Helens. We talked about that last week. Go listen to episode 270. Since we forgot to mention that this is episode 271. Sorry.
Yeah. Good one, Jeffrey.
I know, douche. So I found this article. It popped up in one of the readers. I didn't realize two things. I didn't realize that people hated Brooklyn Beckham.
They do?
Apparently.
Okay.
Because he is getting lots of gigs as a fashion photographer, a lifestyle photographer.
Okay.
And people are crying nepotism. And duh, of course it's nepotism.
Duh. Mommy and daddy can buy you everything you need. You have no worry about having to make a living. You know, like you could have fun.
And maybe he's got 10 million followers on Instagram.
Of course he does, yeah.
So if he is at least competent as a photographer, which the evidence says that he's actually pretty good.
Yep.
Of course brands are going to hire him. Of course brands are going to you know, they're paying him for his reach as much as for his talent.
Right. Yeah.
So I kind of don't understand, like, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, so what exactly are people saying? I'm missing this.
Well, the there's an F-Stoppers.
Saying, how dare he, kind of thing.
Well, there's an F-Stoppers article, and it goes, there's something I've always loved about the photography community, and in an age of the internet, it's nearly a unique quality. We give constructive feedback and rarely tear into a photographer unprovoked. Into should be one word. It is welcoming. It's a welcoming environment that cultivates growth for the most part. One particular area in which all previously mentioned qualities are magnified many times over is young photographers. Their successes are fawned over and their mistakes excused, as they should be. Unless, of course, you're called Brooklyn Beckham. The vitriolic barrage of distaste toward an 18-year-old photographer this week has been repugnant, and I'm being kind and patently unacceptable if I'm not. So I guess there's been a lot of kind of hatred towards him online for the work that he's getting and for the campaigns that he's shooting. He's got a book called What I See.
Yeah, I see that.
I mean, I kind of don't get it. It's as if you guys who are complaining about this don't realize that nepotism is a thing.
Right.
And you don't acknowledge that photography has changed in the last several years to where there are lots of photographers who get gigs based on their reach.
Yep.
Or at least based partially on their reach.
Yep.
Now, the fact that he's got a decent eye and you know, what's the problem?
Yeah, I think that people, I mean, people get, I'm sure people get jealous and envious, but yeah, of course it is. And it's also interesting to think that in some ways is a little bit of a Streisand effect thing. It's like by making a big stink about this guy who you think shouldn't be noticed for who he is, you're creating a situation where he's getting more press and more notice for who he is. You know? Right. It's like if you don't like the guy or whatever, for whatever reasons you have, and you probably haven't met him personally, I'm sure, yeah, you know, who knows? Maybe he's a nice guy, maybe he's a little brat. We have no idea, right? But regardless, you know, just ignore him.
He's got a tattoo of a Leica on his left forearm. What do you have? You know?
Yeah.
Where's your commitment? Either get some ink or shut up.
And Andy's holding a, what is that, an H6 or an H5 in his picture up there.
Who was the guy, I can't remember his name, that young, lifestyle, lots of naked people. We've talked about him a couple times.
Come on. The guy in LA,
yes.
Shoots Terry Richardson-esque kind of things, but it's like...
It's not Tyler Shields.
There is Tyler Shields, though. He's a guy, too.
But it's not him. Is his name Jeremy? No. You know who I'm talking about, though, right?
I think it might be a different guy than I was thinking of. But go ahead.
Anyway, you know, similar reaction to some of that, where it's like, Oh, he's just shooting, you know, young hipsters partying. It's like, well, okay, but there's a market for that.
Well, that's, and okay. That is the real thing, right? Is that in the world of photography, it doesn't matter what is in some weird, even if there is some objective good, what is objectively good, right? It's what is selling at any particular moment. And if you're some old guy and what's hip and now and new, and they want to get the millennials or the people who are in the generation Y or whoever the hell the generation after the millennials are, is into the stuff. And what they're getting is this Instagram culture of them out in the Joshua Tree desert taking pictures of themselves with their iPhones, and that gets 4 billion hits because, I don't know, because that's what those kids want or think they want or like or whatever, then that's the only thing that really matters to right. marketers. It's not saying that this is good art or good photography even. It's just saying that this is what is good for marketing and PR, which, my God, he's the child of two of the biggest marketing, PR, self-promotion people in the history of the world. Of course he's going to be like this and be good at it and have a big audience, you know? Plus, he's like a good-looking kid with good hair, you know?
I will say, it does seem like he's trying to put in the time. It seems like he's trying to get better. It seems like he's not... just, and I don't know a lot about the kid. I'm just looking through his feed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like he is just solely trying to capitalize on his name.
No, he's shooting. I don't think these pictures are particularly great, but they're fine. You know, there's a lot of other 18-year-old photographers that we've known and seen who are really, really great. Like wow, who the hell is that person? You know, I don't think he's on that level, but it doesn't matter. People, it's, you know, that's irrelevant for what it is. You're conflating fame or audience with quality, and those things are not connected.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're connected, you know. Sometimes they're one in one, but it's sort of a quadrant thing. There's audience and quality, and in all four permutations of those things, you know, audience and no quality, quality and no audience, you know.
Right.
So, he happens to be in the audience and maybe quality quadrant, and like, good for him, you know? Whether or not he does anything that actually changes anything or lasts, or if he's always just, oh, yeah, and their kid was a photographer, you know, 30 years from now.
Right.
Which could be, or, you know, oh, he did photography for years, and now he's a, I don't know, movie director or a, you know, he becomes a entertainment lawyer, you know, who knows? He's 18. I was at a cookout a couple weeks ago, and there were these two kids there, one going off to college next year, the other one 16, brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I said to the kid, I said, "Hey, Harry, what are you planning on doing?" He's like, "Oh, I'm going to Brooklyn College." I was like, "Oh, for what for?" "Film." And I said, "Oh, you want to direct? Do you want to write? Do you want to shoot? What's your thing?" He goes, "I don't know. That's what I'm going to find that out, to figure that out." And you kind of forget when you're old buggers like you and me that you don't know anything when you're 18, you know? And if we have any like teenagers or people of that age who are listening now, if you don't know what you want to do or what you're trying to accomplish or what you're interested in, and you feel weird about the fact that you don't know that, that's perfectly natural. Of course you don't know. You're 18. So this kid's 18, you know? So this is what he's into, and more power to him.
Well, and who knows where his career is going to be at, you know, 10 years, 20 years. I mean, look at somebody like Joey L.
Right.
You know, look at the work he did when he was 16 with like indie bands and alternative bands in LA in the Pacific Northwest and whatever, versus what he's doing now in parts unknown all over the world. He's embedding himself with, you know, rebel soldiers in, you know, the Middle East, and getting these incredible portraits, and he's going to India and shooting holy men. And I mean, his the arc of his career in the past 10, 15 years has been phenomenal to watch.
Right.
And he's gotten so much better.
Yes, he has. And the other thing is that you can look at somebody like this kid, and even if he isn't successful, quote unquote, Jeffrey, he's going to have a huge audience, and he has the means to do whatever he wants to do. If he wants to go build a giant set in Kazakhstan the size of a city and go shoot it as some sort of large scale project and put it out as a book or whatever it is, even if he does that and loses the money, it's still like this big accomplishment he has, because he has the ability to do that kind of thing, right? Like there's no limits to this kid. If the limits are his imagination and his parents' pocketbook to some extent, right? And I'm not saying that he needs to rely on that or he's going to rely on that, but he could, you know, and he'd still could make all the art he wants to make his entire life with no limits. It's great. You know, I mean, he's in a very good position. I mean, lots of pressure, I'm sure, being a kid of that kind of thing, you know,
right.
Hanging out with all the other kids, drinking Cristal or whatever the kids do. Is that what kids do? They drink Cristal?
I don't know.
What is Cristal anyway?
Hanging out with the other kids, drinking Cristal.
Show title.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I don't know. I think good for him, man.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, it's, you know, if you're going to criticize somebody, I don't know. I think pick a better reason, because, you know, duh, nepotism does exist, but it seems like he's trying. It seems like he's putting in the time.
Is that all that is that all that you require, is the fact that somebody try, if they have, you know?
Well, I think that's a big part of it.
Right.
But I think we have seen people get better.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen, like I just said, Joey L, you know, yeah, he's tried and he's gotten better. He's committed himself to the work, and he seems to have a terrific work ethic from what little I know. Again, just flipping through Mr. Beckham's work. I don't know. It seems like he's got a good eye, and it seems like, just in a cursory glance, it seems like he's serious about doing this. I mean, look, there are a lot of other roads he could go down if all he wanted to do was be famous for the sake of being famous.
Yeah, and hang out with his friends and drink Cristal.
And hang out with his friends and drink Cristal. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what he should do with his images, Jeffrey?
What's that?
He should put them on Squarespace.
Maybe he does.
Yeah, we have to see what Brooklyn, is his name is Brooklyn? Brooklyn Beckham? I think I remember when this kid was born. Like, I remember him being born, like, and them calling him Brooklyn and that being, like, a thing. Interesting. Weird.
Why Brooklyn, I wonder?
I don't know, because it's awesome.
Right. Wow.
Okay. Hey, put your stuff on Squarespace and make your next move, your next website. It's beautiful. It's responsive. It's where you want to be if you don't want to have to think about how to build your website. They got beautiful award-winning designer templates, you know, created by professional designers that present your ideas online in a uniform, clean, responsive fashion that looks great on every platform. They've got 24/7 customer service. So it's award-winning 24/7 customer service. So you can email or chat with these people online, you know, whenever you need to, 24 hours a day. So if you are like I used to be and stayed up till 3 a.m.
You don't stay up till 3 a.m. anymore.
No, I have sort of fallen into my wife's schedule.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because when she goes away on business, like she did last week for a couple of days, instantly I'm back to going to sleep at 2 a.m.
Right.
It's weird. Your body has a natural rhythm, right? It's very, very strange. But if you have a problem at 3 a.m., you can chat and you can email these people and they'll get right back to you. They're fantastic. You don't have to worry about upgrading anything. There's nothing to install, nothing to patch, nothing to upgrade. It's constantly there are new features being added to Squarespace. Like last year when they added SSL support so you can encrypt your website, HTTPS. It's like, oh, you just got to go and hit a checkbox. You don't have to install anything. Yeah. You just got to choose to turn it on.
No control panel flip through manuals, reading, nothing.
Yeah, and all the things you can change are drop downs and check boxes in the settings, and it's easy and it's all intuitive and it makes sense. And that, like, you know what's funny? Sometimes the blocks you can pull in, Jeffrey, where one of the blocks you can pull into a page is a Amazon item, and you can put your affiliate code in the settings. So you bring in an item, you can search for it right there, like the nurse's scissors we were looking at earlier. You know, hit enter, and there's a box with the nurse's scissors, a link that goes to Amazon with your affiliate code automatically all in there. It's like, boom, you know, hey guys, you know, I always have these in my kit for when I have to cut stuff down during shoots or whatever. You know, it's like so easy to put that stuff in there. And now they support domains where they you can actually host your domains at Squarespace. It's a unique domain experience that's fully transparent, simple to set up, flexible for any kind of website. So, you know, you have a good idea, go park your domain right at Squarespace. So when you build your Squarespace site, it's already there. It's all ready to go. It's used by a wide range of creative people, businesses, musicians, designers, restaurants, artists, and more. Go check it out. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code OTP to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for On Taking Pictures. We thank Squarespace very much for their support of On Taking Pictures and 5x5. Squarespace, make your next move.
Thank you. Hey, you know, one quick follow-up.
Yep.
If these companies hiring any, insert, you know, photographer here, weren't getting a return, your name might get you in the door, but they're not going to keep hiring you. If they're not getting a return on their investment, they don't care what your name is.
Yeah. That loop, though, is, I think, a much longer loop than most people give it credit for. And what I mean is, you know, I was in that advertising world here in New York for years and years and years, and you can see marketing people coming to a meeting. All right, here's the big idea, Jeffrey. We get rich kids who've had millions of followers on Instagram. We pay them money to do this stuff. It's going to be great. The point at which they decide that that's not great anymore because they're, you know, the brand is going down instead of up or level or whatever it is, could be years. I feel like we're still like in the situation where people are kind of throwing money at all this social media stuff, and I don't know that there's actually that great of a return on it. I don't think they figured it out yet. I think that they're still experimenting, trying to figure out if that's worth what you think it is, you know? Is if I had a million followers on Instagram and people, and I took pictures of my Allbirds shoes or whatever,
right,
that I got, is that the same as a million people watching an ad for Allbirds shoes? I don't know. You know, I'm sure there's somebody's done some sort of mathematical equation to figure out audience reach and, you know, but I really wonder whether it works as well as they think it does, or if that's just the current zeitgeist of the way marketing works in today's world, you know, because they're still trying to figure it out because everything's shifting, because magazines and TV and everything are kind of going out the window. It's interesting how everything's changing.
You think TV is going out? TV is where the best movies are happening.
Yeah, but they're happening on Netflix, which has no advertising, you know?
Right.
It's not. Your regular TV show, is Big Bang Theory still like one of the big shows? I remember
no
reading somewhere that the highest rated shows now would have gotten canceled 20, 30 years ago for low ratings. You know what I mean? Like the amount of people who watch Cheers is like four times the amount of people who watch Big Bang Theory. Just because there was only three things on and that's what people chose to watch. And, you know, there's much more homogeneity in the stuff that people watched. Do you know that students of color make up a majority of U.S. public schools now?
Is that true?
As of last year, 51.8% non-white, 48.2% white. That's fascinating.
Wow.
Demographics are changing. See, this is what marketeers look at. And they're just like, all right, how do we capitalize on that? Speaking of services online.
Right.
Okay, so Photo Bucket. Did you ever use Photo Bucket?
I didn't. I did not. Didn't.
But you've seen stuff.
Wasn't it big with like wedding and event photographers? Bay Photo? That was Bay Photo.
Well, I think Photo Bucket was too, because I think Photo Bucket is one of those sites where a lot of photographers put their stuff up, and then if you went into forums, there'd be linked in images from Photo Bucket.
Huh. Does that make sense? An imager?
Yeah, thing? That kind of thing. But like that, right? So Photo Bucket has changed their terms of service, which means that if you have just the lower end subscription, any links that you did embed somewhere else, whether in your site or in a forum or somewhere else, no longer work unless you go and you upgrade to the now $399 subscription. $399 a year. What the hell are they giving you for $399 a year?
It went from free to $400 a year?
I think it's like the pro version is now $400 a year. I'm looking here to find out what does $400 get you, because that's a lot of money.
So you know? Are they holding your images hostage for this kind of money?
Well,
do you still have access to your...
You still have access to them, but anything you shared somewhere else no longer shows up. Like, basically, the embed stuff doesn't work unless you... The embed system that used to work no longer does work for people who... So if you embedded a bunch of stuff when you wrote a blog post on Tony Mac about something you did, those pictures will not show up anymore because they've changed the way it works.
Wow. Right.
Okay. So the reason why I bring this up is I want to know what you think, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
About hosting your stuff online at places like Flickr or Photo Bucket or even Amazon or Google Photos or, you know, versus just trying to keep everything local. Where do you come down on this stuff? And is part of it that it worries you how things could or would change, if that makes sense?
Well, I don't know. I mean, in terms of like, that's the only place, or a service like Instagram where you're posting.
Well, a lot of people use these things as their place where stuff sits, right? That's like a common thing, or was a common thing. I've never been a big Flickr user or any of those kinds of things. I don't have a big public place where I just dump all my images and people can look through them, you know? But there are people for whom that's the way they do it, right?
Yes. Yeah. I used Flickr, 2007, 2008, 2009.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. And I don't know. It seemed at the time, from what I remember, it seemed like other services were evolving around it and it was kind of stagnating.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
And, you know, for whatever reason.
Because Yahoo bought them and didn't do anything, right? Is that what it was?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, they changed a few things, but, you know, by and large, it functionally, it still kind of stays the same.
Right.
Is it a situation where there are definitely features or benefits that you want out of it, or is it just a grass is greener? You want somebody to do something new so that you can try the something new.
Right.
Either way,
And then you gotta keep moving your old stuff over to the new one, and you know, right. You just keep, it's like shifting to a new computer every couple of years.
Sure. I mean, it is one of the dangers of hosting or putting any content on a third party service other than your own website.
Right.
You sign a TOS, they can change that at any time, and you can, you know, flame post about it, or you can, you know, like in the case of Facebook, you know, I certify that I do not agree with blah, blah, blah. That's not legal or binding or anything other than you looking goofy for posting it.
Right, right.
You sign their terms of service, so they get to change whatever they want, whenever they want, and you either abide by it or you leave the service.
Yeah, yeah. I use Instagram, but I upload stuff, pictures from my phone automatically upload to Dropbox and mm-hmm. to Google Photos. Mm-hmm. But that's just so, God forbid, I lose my phone there somewhere else, you know, because I don't really care. Everything else
right,
on
but
my
that's
phone
more
is,
of a backup solution, right, exactly. not a here, go way. Look at my work solution.
Absolutely. Yeah, by the way, I finally found the pricing page for PhotoBucket.
What do you got?
It's $60 a year, gets you 50 gigs, no linking, no third-party hosting. $100 a year gets
Wait,
you
so,
100
So basically,
gigs.
It's just a storage medium then at that point.
Yeah, or I guess you could go there to PhotoBucket and see somebody's... You could see Jeffrey Sidoris's page at PhotoBucket, but you can't link to it, I guess. I don't know. Or link to specific images. For $100 a year, which, by the way, is the price of a terabyte of space on Dropbox, I think. Actually, it might even be less than that, but I think it might be a terabyte for $100. You get 102 gigs... for $100, and you can unlimited linking, but no third-party hosting, so you can't like have it embedded in another page.
Which is kind of dumb,
right?
I mean, who
does that, or who would need to pay that much?
I mean,
for
why
it?
Yeah. why would you? It's 2017. Why would you disable that?
Okay, hold on, let me finish, and then I'll say.
All right, go ahead.
And the third one is $399 a year, gives you 500 gigs, 502 gigs of storage. Unlimited linking, unlimited third-party hosting. I think a lot of this hosting stuff is actually getting back to the past kind of thing, is backward compatibility with stuff you put up 100 years ago on some site somewhere. You know what I mean? That this was a feature that existed. And I think that's what people are most upset about, is the stuff that they link to and embedded all over the place suddenly stops working and it feels like you're being held hostage. You know, it's not like, oh, if you were on these plans before you're grandfathered in and for future people, this is changing. It's changing for the other people too, which is kind of a very strange thing. Maybe they're sucking wind and they just need to make money and this is what they've come up with. But who the hell would spend $40 a month on that?
You know,
that's
right.
Crazy. $40 a month is a lot of money. That's storage anywhere else you want. You know, Google will give you 2 terabytes for that amount of money or whatever it is, you know?
According to PhotoBucket's homepage, they host over 15 billion images. With this change to their subscription policy, they broke links to millions of photos on all kinds of websites and changed it with this icon. Wow. So it's kind of like a link shaming.
This person's link not shaming. Paying for it.
Yeah. Please update your account to enable third-party hosting. Is what it gets replaced with.
Can I also say, though, in my 3 minutes of doing this while we're discussing this, I've gotten a 404 from a link that was on the homepage, gave me a 404.
On their homepage?
Yep.
Yeah.
Then I just for shiggles,
maybe some of that $40 a month fee should be put over to Squarespace to hire some of their engineers.
Even worse, Jeffrey, I just typed in Wadman to see if anybody like had put my images up there. You know what I mean? Just that kind of thing, just to see what comes up.
Yeah.
And a page of stuff comes up, and then there's a next page at the bottom. I clicked to the next page, and I got a PHP error.
Whoops.
Like a line 424 has, you know, whatever. So obviously...
Looks like PhotoBucket forgot to pay their CompuServe bill.
This is, you know, yeah, right? It's just, it's weird. So it's even hard, though, deciding which stuff to put your money in on, you know? I recently had to buy more space on Google because I went over the 17 gigs I had in my Gmail space or whatever. And I was like, I don't want to have to go through removing stuff. Like, I'll just pay $2 a month for 50 gigs or whatever it is, you know? Which I'm happy to do because Gmail is well worth $2 a month. But even then, it's like, okay, well, that gave me a ton of space to upload all the pictures I want for the next, you know, X years. I think it might have actually been 100 gigs for $2 or $3 a month. It's very, very odd that this is still a thing. And I wonder if all of this stuff is kind of dying now that Facebook and all these other places and Instagram are where people are posting their images.
Mm-hmm.
Way more images probably on Facebook every day than are on any of these other sites.
These are
dinosaurs of another age.
I would imagine that Facebook probably is the top of the heap, if not close to it.
Sad world. Sad world. The world's changing, Jeffrey.
It is.
And not towards us.
Yeah. I found this pretty interesting, you posting this dead hand control.
Yeah, so Edward Albee, who is a famous playwright,
yep,
died last year. In his will, he had what's called a dead hand clause or dead man's hand, something. What is it?
Dead hand control.
There you go. Thank you. Dead hand control. It's a term in the legal world. Says dead hand control. Basically, he's told the people who are executing his will that he wants any unfinished work destroyed after his death. So if I die tomorrow, burn everything that's not public. I find this kind of interesting because, I mean, he had plays that were unfinished that he had shared unfinished versions of with other people, you know, that's like, oh, well, let's run this act of this play to see how it looks and whatever. So some of this stuff does exist outside of his hands, as it were. But that is exact. Were you making a joke?
It was a little rim shot.
There you go. Nice. But that his executors are supposed to destroy all this stuff. And I don't know. It kind of gets into the whole same thing with the no negative shall be printed after my death stuff, right, that we've talked about before.
But why not?
That's my question. Yeah. What are we trying to do here? Is this...
I mean, we had this happen with Frank Herbert, author of Dune,
yep,
where his son came in and you know, finished a book that he had started. Well, maybe that's not... I mean, now, granted, all evidence says that Frank provided, you know, or took a lot of notes on where the story was going, et cetera, et cetera. But it's still not his voice, and it wouldn't be Albee's voice to... Maybe he didn't publish these works or didn't want to mount this play for personal reasons, just because he wrote it, but he thought it was crap and didn't want it representing his legacy or his existing body of work.
Right.
But because somebody's going to see a chance to make a few bucks and mount a previously unseen Edward Albee play.
Yep.
I have no problem with this.
Flip side, though, is doesn't everything that some person made, especially somebody who's a known person in a particular field, like a playwright, for mm-hmm. scholars and things... to be able to see the roads he didn't go down and the things he didn't finish. Isn't there a lot of value in that?
But maybe he doesn't want you to look behind the curtain. Maybe he doesn't want you to see that.
Yeah.
I keep a lot of sketches and a lot of notes and a lot of writings that will never see the light of day because they're not for you. They're for me.
Right.
And after I die, I don't want, I mean, it's not going to happen, but I wouldn't want somebody going through it and going, oh, well, look at this. This is a series of, you know, life drawings from 2004. Let's post, you know, I wouldn't want that because if I had wanted those to be public, I would have made them public.
Yeah. But
Ryan McGinley. It just popped into my head. Sorry. From the earlier discussion, Ryan McGinley, if you're not aware of his work, terrific photographer, go look him up.
Yes. That
Sorry.
Guy.
Anyway, continue.
There's a certain level of ego in all of this, though, that you're dead, you know?
Right, but why not respect those wishes? I mean, let's say that for the sake of argument, there was a previous draft of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Right.
That went in a completely different direction.
Yep.
That ultimately, you know, that was a sketch play. That was a sketch image kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
To Kill a Mockingbird, the prequel that was released. Well, did she really want that released, or was that somebody else's idea that they convinced? I don't know. I mean, I think those wishes, where I'm at right now in my life, circa 2017 on July 5th, I think, why not? If that was their dying wish, that I released what I wanted to release during my life, and if it didn't get released, I didn't want it to be released, and yeah, it should be destroyed. I'm fine with that.
I just feel like there's a good chance of important work being destroyed for nothing other than somebody's, but we're not always, as you've said before, we're not always our best critic of what's good and what's bad, you know? What if there's some masterpiece in there that he just forgot about or didn't ever finish or what have you, that could change the way society sees race or gender or, you know, humanity, and it's getting destroyed because this guy was like, it's not worth it.
But why shouldn't he, if he has the ability to either release it or not release it during his life, then why shouldn't those wishes be honored? What if he destroyed it? You know, I mean, it's no different, is it?
Yeah.
And I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, here. No. You're right. Like if he threw it in the flames because he didn't like it.
What was Vivian Westwood's son that just burned all of the punk memorabilia?
Oh, right. On the backyard. We talked about that.
What was his, I can't remember his name. Anyway, burned like, you know, $5 million of original pressings and clothing and art. And, you know, I think that was probably more of an artistic or political statement than Mr. Albee just saying, look,
it's his to burn, but
I want all of this stuff destroyed.
Yeah, I guess.
But I can see the other side of it. Sorry to interrupt. I can see the other side of it. You know, if all of Vivian Mayer's negatives and film had been destroyed, we wouldn't have that body of work.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm thinking. And I also,
what would the hipsters fawn over?
As I get older,
kidding.
As I get older, I take my ego less and less. I give my ego less and less value.
But why does it have to be an ego-driven decision?
Well, no. Okay. Sure. Okay. I'm just using that as a shorthand for mm-hmm, what mm-hmm. I care about. Right. I see myself more and more in line with, you know what? I'm fortunate enough to be alive, to live in this world and do all this stuff. Like in some ways, if somebody doesn't care about whatever it is I've made after I die, great. But if they do, to throw it out because of something, I'm not there to care whether or not somebody likes it or not, or whether right. there's a new, you know, if somebody made some money off of the Mockingbird book after her death, great. You know, I guess it got lukewarm reviews, but what if it was really great? You know?
Okay, but on the other side, what if it wasn't? What if it came out that he was, you know, an anti-Semite or yep. a yep. racist or, you yep. know, whatever, because he'd written this work for himself to express his views and never wanted it to be made public, then it diminishes the rest of the body of work.
True. I just think that it's fascinating that after somebody's death, they can still have legal control over what was theirs when they were alive. Mm-hmm. That is such a strange concept to me. Seems to me that if you died and left me all of your negatives, Jeffrey, that like you shouldn't be able to tell me what I can and can't do with those negatives. You left them to me. You know, that seems weird.
Did he leave them to a particular person and then go, and it's your responsibility to destroy them?
I think he wanted that stuff destroyed, and he was gay, never had children. And gave most of his money to some organization he set up for, you know, kids to learn how to write.
Here's a paragraph in this article, which you can put in the show notes on the Times. For writers, drafts of unfinished work can be quite sensitive, said Doug White, a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright who is president of the Dramatists Guild of America. Quote, these drafts are not public property. They belong to the author, and the author has the right to determine their fate. And James Bundy, dean of the Yale School of Drama, says, quote, Edward's choice strikes me as entirely in keeping with his own exacting standards, end quote.
Right.
It's no more our business than it would have been if he had made a little bonfire of his work before his death or shredded some manuscripts one day long ago. Perhaps he did, Mr. Bundy said. It's ultimately a good thing for artists to negotiate their own artistic destinies within the framework of the relevant laws. They have no more and no fewer rights than would you and I in the same situation.
Yeah. It's also interesting in here, they say that the executors have made clear that they plan to honor Albee's desires. Albee's desires, even though they may be controversial. In May, for example, they refused to allow a tiny Oregon theater to cast a black actor as a blonde character in a production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, citing the playwright's intentions as expressed during his lifetime. I also am fascinated by the idea that playwrights can say who can and who cannot put on their play, even though their play is for sale. You know what I mean? That's an interest. Like, I can go buy a copy of this play, but they can tell me if I can put it up in front of the public or not.
Sure.
And who can be cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. That's fascinating to me. Like, I'm not a theater person, so I don't know the intricacies of all this, but that is really interesting to me. That's the case. And right. it happens all the time, right? Where they say, no, you know, this school has to pay to do this thing. And, you know, I'm sorry, we're not going to allow you to do it, even if you could pay, because artistic reasons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's legally allowed to do this. I just think that the more I think about it, the more I think, like, ugh, who cares? Eventually, it goes back to the just some guy theory of life. You know, eventually you're just going to be some guy. No matter how famous you are today, in 10,000 years, no one's going to know who Steve Jobs is. You know what I mean?
Bite your tongue.
He's just going to be some guy back then. And I think that to think that it matters how we're perceived, I don't know. I think that ultimately the world would be better off if other people saw them, even the mistakes that we each made. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't feel so bad about ourselves when we ourselves made mistakes. Does that make sense? You know,
you're talking to a guy who beats himself up constantly for every mistake.
Right. Now, if
perceived
it was,
or real,
right? And if there was more understanding between people that everyone makes mistakes, you know, what is the old thing like? If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Right.
You know, it's like, of course you're going to make mistakes. Of course you're going to fail. Of course you're going to try something that's not going to work out. But that process, I mean, talking about our whole show is about process. You know, it's not about the final results all the time.
Right.
So the process of showing somebody or at least somewhere in the archives, Jeffrey, I don't think that somebody needs to perform an early draft of Virginia Woolf, but wouldn't it be interesting in the Albee archives for playwrights to be able to go back and write scholarly papers on how it changed and how it morphed in the process of creating something? Like, that's interesting in and to itself, you know?
It is, but again, he presented to the world that which he wanted the world to see.
Yep. And that's the way it's going to be, and that's the way it's legal. I just thought it was an interesting article.
No, it's fascinating. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Dead hand control. Plus, saying dead hand control is
you like
really
that?
Fun.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad we could help you out. Maybe that I like saying dead hand control. That should be the thing.
That's basically what I want to say.
Right.
You got anything else?
No. Where are we at?
We're about an hour in. We can keep talking about other stuff if you like.
What would you like to talk about? I will go. I will
go anywhere
where you'd like to lead.
Oh boy, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Actually, what? I do have something.
Okay.
And it's something that I've been writing about for the next newsletter. And it's very simple. It's what's next. I've been working on this book for off and on for a long time. In fact, I found the first outline for this book was from September
1963.
That's right. September of 2013.
Okay, so 4 years.
But my father died in November of 2013.
Ah.
And I spent, you know, much time leading up to then out with him. So everything kind of got put on hold. And I picked it up again in, I think, 2015 and started working on it again. But I guess, one of the questions I'm faced with is this is certainly the most ambitious solo project I've done. And now I'm kind of left with going, what's next? You know, yes, I've got to market it and get it out and get it in people's hands.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it done? I mean, it's done in the sense that it is
the
complete
output portion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The sales and that kind of thing is just ramping up. But in terms of now, what comes next. I can't decide quite yet if this has whetted my appetite for, or wet my appetite. What would it be? Whetted or wet?
Wet, I think. Wet. Past
tense. It has wet. Anyway, whether I want to do another written project or whether I want to do something more photographic. Now, the interesting thing about this project, I love writing, but there were long stretches where I hated working on this thing.
Right. Why?
Because it's not the kind of writing I do.
Okay.
It's not the kind of writing I typically do. It's more technical. It's dry, for lack of a better word. There's not a lot of flourish in it because it doesn't need to be.
Right.
The tone perfectly fits the material, in my opinion. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to do it, was because it was such a challenge, this style of writing. So I don't know if the next, is the next thing going to be a poetry anthology just so I can get back to, you know, writing with flourish, or
you start writing poetry? You write poetry?
I have ever since I was a kid.
Have I ever read any of your poetry?
No. No.
Okay. So
no,
they're
no. Well, that's the dead hand control.
Am I supposed to have known that?
No. That's the dead hand control that will never see the light of day.
Because it's not good. It's too personal. It's what? Why?
Because it's just for me.
Okay.
In the same way that I wouldn't publish any journals or you know, diary or entries or anything like that. That stuff's not for you. That stuff's just for me.
Okay.
You know, there are letters that I write to people that are just for me. They're just to work through something or to express something or to explore how to express something that doesn't warrant public viewing.
Okay. I get that.
So I don't know. I mean, it's how do you decide when you come off of 365, are you going to start another one or do you go, okay, now I need to, you know, have a shower and go in a different direction from this?
Yeah, I don't know. It's fun because I am currently, well, let me see how many up there. 185, which means I'm over halfway done.
And be honest.
Yep.
Are you bored with it yet?
No. No. I felt like I haven't been able to spend as much time on them in the past couple weeks as I would have liked, but that's just because I was busy, you know, trying to make rent. So yeah, now is like getting back into really doing what I want to do with them. Yeah. So, no, not bored. Love doing it. I mean, there are days when it's like, oh shoot, I have to shoot somebody today and it's a weird day and I didn't think I'd be where I am. And now I got to find somebody, you know,
right.
That happens. But, but that's interestingly enough, that's led to far more diversity in the images, both, you know, age and gender and race and, you know, all the rest of it. That's led to far more diversity than the last time I did this, which I'm actually happy about. So, you know, everything's a double-edged sword. But no, I'm not bored. I like it, you know, keeps me busy. It keeps me honest. You know, it's like every single day I'm making new stuff on top of stuff that I actually have to do otherwise. So got a lot to show for 6 months of doing stuff, but it's strange. You know, the time slows down where it's like, oh my God, I've only been doing this for 6 months. This feels, you know, the stuff I shot 3 months ago feels like 3 years ago, you know, in some weird timeline, but that's great. Cause it makes every moment of 2017 that much more. I'm sucking the marrow out of it as opposed to, you know, just letting it pass
and
by.
Maybe it leads, you know, maybe there's something within it. And this is an aspect of the book that I hadn't really planned on, but maybe in looking at the totality of the work, you go, oh, this portion here, I can expand on this into a whole new thing.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, that's,
you know,
the big part of it is experimentation, right? So you, it's like, oh, you know, there's pictures in there. Somebody was saying the other day, they're just like, you know, those pictures are a lot of them are like really different for you or whatever, like, oh, different things. And I'm like, yeah, well, part of it is being able to do stuff that's not my normal thing, as just a fun, like, hey, let's see what happens. And no one gets hurt in the making of this image, you know?
Right.
It doesn't matter. Great. You know, this one's different. Is it successful? Is it not successful? Does it matter? No. You know, yeah. I made it and it's like, you know, it's something different. It moves on. And like, maybe that's a new look or a new technique or a new whatever. And that's kind of what's fun about it is that I don't have anybody telling me what to do. And I don't have an audience that gets a say in what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I found some unexpected sort of inspirations in doing this.
Well, you came up with certain articles or what do you call each?
Well, I think there's a section of the book that could ultimately
explode.
Live on as a yeah, no, it could ultimately live on as a standalone component that keeps happening, that keeps coming out. But I also really I did a lot of drawings for this book. I did a lot of technical drawing. I did a lot of you know, icons, and you know, so it kind of sparked that side of creativity again.
Right, in line drawing in, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Line drawing. And I did a lot of pencil drawings leading up to it. And that was fun. Cause I hadn't done much drawing in a long time. And I don't know, you know, I'm not going to be all, you know, Illustrator boy now and start releasing, you know, drawings or Illustrator tutorials or, than anything like that. But I did find some aspects of it where I went, oh, okay. And the photography. I mean, there are, you know, there are 100 original photos in the book that are from various areas of the country. That was a lot of fun in not only taking them, but culling them together and assembling them into something that hopefully works.
Right.
So I don't know. There are a lot of different directions to go in, and I'm eager to see how that shakes out.
It's interesting that, I mean, you still obviously have to do the final stuff on this guy, right? I mean, just trying to figure out where it's going to live and
yeah, I mean,
making
it's,
it and
it's,
selling it, whatever.
All the production is done. All the production is done. The
except for resizing it.
That's yeah, no shit. Thanks, InDesign. It's been proofread. It's been sent out to the people that need to see it to make the final decisions on it. But yeah, it's where it's going to live, how it's going
to
look.
Yeah. I guess it is interesting to me though, that you're already obsessing about what's going to happen next. Right?
Well, I'm not obsessing about it. It's not an obsession yet.
I guess
I'm
the
just,
question is thinking about it always the right way to go when planning the next thing? Or is it just about not thinking about it and letting it happen?
I think there's truth to both of those things. And in fact, we were down in DC yesterday. Was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. No. Yes. No. Nope. Day before. Sunday. No. Monday. Anyway, whatever it was. and we went to this little Indian place, this little neighborhood Indian restaurant that was fantastic. And it was a neighborhood that I hadn't been to before. And getting there took us through Union Station and seeing all the trains coming and going had me start thinking about maybe there's a project in there with trains. Maybe there's a project with people who work for or on trains, since trains are such a big part of my family history.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something there. I don't know. So I'm not obsessing about it as much as I'm just thinking about it. Oh, by the way,
yeah,
I went to the post office at Union Station. There are some new Forever stamps.
Yep.
Are printed with thermochromic ink.
Okay.
They're an eclipse. So in the cool temperature, the eclipse is blacked out. But if you put your thumb on it or take it out into the heat, then the thermochromic ink goes transparent and you see the moon.
Oh, that's cute.
It's super cool. So I had been looking for them and got actually the last two sheets of them from the post office.
The last two sheets ever are in Jeffrey's hands.
Maybe. Yeah. Although they do sell them at the Postal Museum, so we can go get them there.
Or on eBay, anyway, I'm sure.
Or on eBay. Yeah.
I think that what's next is an interesting topic. In fact, let me think about that more and let's talk about it next week.
All right.
Let's
go to the group.
That's a good one. Go to the group. I'm going to put a thing about the other thing.
The thing about
272.
Interference was the last one. And really some pretty cool interpretations of this, both literal and kind of more metaphorical. Chris Ainslie.
You know.
Picture
just,
of an elephant.
Just an elephant.
Just big, giant, is, you know, beautiful. Jason Kinney. Gorgeous light coming through the window.
Yep.
Love that. Rotz. Man, you know I love your stuff.
Wait,
so,
do...
So,
Mario Mirabile's picture of the mannequin heads. Do mannequin heads freak you out as much as they freak me out?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? There's this Tim Timoteo one of the rainbow. The other day, I guess it was Saturday night, Conrad and I went to a friend, Mac Primo, was putting on a one-man play that he had done. And we got on the subway and we went a few stops over to Carroll Gardens. And as it comes up above ground for two stops, mm-hmm. and we're on the train, we're going, whatever, and the rainstorm had just gone through. And everyone started going, oh my God. And looking out, Jeffrey, there was a rainbow that went from one side of the sky to the other side of the sky, like in a movie. The entire, like, wow, went cool. all the way up, went all the way down, and there was a double rainbow. The whole thing was like a double nice. Full rainbow. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life.
Did you start crying?
It's so beautiful. It's a double rainbow. No, I did not. But I did take a picture, although the panorama function on my phone got screwed up, and a little chunk of it's like looks like it's falling down. Like it was built up there and falling. It was pretty cute.
Whoops.
Interference.
Chris, L-E-P-E. Lepe? Chris, tell us how to pronounce your name. But love that shot of the Dipper looking yep. up through the trees. That's terrific.
Hard to focus at night when you do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That's always my big thing when I'm trying to do stuff at night.
Jen LaChapelle, beautiful shot of clouds from an airplane. Either that or you can fly. Yeah, so Jen, Max, which is it?
Max Next is doing some nice stuff there too. Look at that. Florian picture with
Florian,
the
yep.
multiple exposure.
Wayne Hatfield, Interference, Time to Harvest. Welcome back, Wayne. How have you been? Good to hear from you. Yeah. That's a terrific shot of that field. Barry, old truck. Can't go wrong with an old truck.
You love the old trucks. I saw a thing the other day, Jeffrey. It was every Ford truck since they were invented in 1917 or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was just pictures of each one each year and showing how they changed.
Oh,
yeah.
Send it to me, please.
Love that. I'll
find it. Dennis, been wanting to take this shot for a while and finally got around to it. Didn't seem that difficult, but the high voltage power lines from the tracks generated a boatload of interference. A split second after I hit the shutter, the drone lost the signal and auto returned. That's pretty spiffy.
Drones
what kind of drone do you have, Dennis? Podcast it on takingpictures.com.
You, yeah, here we go. Every Ford truck from 2017 to 2016 ever made. Yeah, here it is. I'll put a link in the show notes.
William, beautiful shot of this Orkney Island. I don't know where that is. I'll have to look that up. Beautiful shot. Sun just kind of peeking up over the horizon.
Drones have gotten quieter. There was somebody with a drone in the park the other day, and it was, I don't know, 30 feet away from me. Usually, you know,
yeah.
it was just like, bzzz. I mean, it was,
I like
not
the little, the little Mavic Spark, I guess is the new one.
Okay. Let me see if that's
control it with hand gestures. You can like wave it away and then wave it back to you.
Get away from me.
Right.
Drone.
oh,
that's
not
a little
4K
tiny
though.
Guy.
Yeah, 1080p, but still looks beautiful.
Yeah, this stuff has gotten pretty scary good. The drones.
Yeah.
Used to be hard to drive. Now they're really easy.
Really easy. Yeah. We're just at the border of being able to. I found out being able to fly them because you cannot fly them within 15 miles of the Capitol.
Even like under 30 feet or whatever.
Nope.
Who's gonna come to your backyard and?
I don't know,
you.
But I don't need to test that theory.
All right, so you're going to buy one and then go to a park outside the 30-mile range?
Well, we're basically, if you go, I guess we are inside of it because we're not that far from, I don't know.
Hey, that the Cecil Rudd put up that Valley Forge National Park Sublime picture. Do you remember that from last week? That is a really nice image.
Where?
Looks very, it's like from 1 week ago. It says, if you keep scrolling down in the assignment section, it's like a yellow tinted color photograph kind of. It's really beautiful. The sky and the field.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't that feel very,
kind of a low POV.
Yeah. And it kind of feels, very filmic, that particular shot.
Yep.
Very nice shot. All right, so
I like these waterfalls. Tork Waterfall in Killarney, Ireland. Brian, beautiful.
Killarney.
Yeah, that's very pretty.
I chose another one from Tom in Michigan's list for this week.
What do you got?
Electric.
That's cool. See what that sparks.
Oh, boy, that was bad.
Come on.
No, that was good. That was good.
Come on. Yeah. You just pretend that it hurts. Hurts? Huh?
Yeah, that's good. I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, electric. Hashtag
electric.
Assignment electric. I'll put a link in the show notes so y'all can know what it is. What it is. What is that from? Is that like a...
I don't know. Maybe Friday or Friday after next?
No, isn't that like a thing like on What's Happening or something?
Maybe Sanford and Son. Could go way back there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, what it is.
Something like what it is, what it was, and what it shall be. I don't know.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
Photographer of the Week. We really Jason didn't use Lee. Him before?
I don't think we did.
We've talked about him, but we didn't use him as Photographer of the Week.
I don't think we did.
Okay, fair enough.
You know what? But maybe I'll make a liar out of myself.
That'll be fun.
I don't think so, because somebody just suggested him.
Yeah, somebody sent an email in.
And I don't remember who it was. Oops. I'm checking the
official checking list.
The list. The official list at chrismatheson.com. No, we used Lee Friedlander twice.
Oh, you're right.
And Lee Miller. So Jason Lee. Yes, that Jason Lee.
Yep.
From My Name is Earl and from...
Scientology.
No longer.
Oh, he quit?
And from Kevin Smith. You know, the movies with Kevin Smith.
Yep. And skateboarder.
And a huge skateboarder since way back in the day. In fact, he still makes skateboards.
Is it true that he left Scientology?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. He was also married. If you watched Leverage, do you ever watch Leverage, that TV show?
I don't.
It's a very cute show. The woman who plays Parker on that show was married to him for many years.
Huh.
So, there you
go. I don't know it. I will tell you that this type of work...
It's right up your alley.
...speaks volumes to me.
Yeah, you like it.
I love this work. I absolutely love... I love the landscapes. I love how he sees it. This type of work, these types of landscapes are... These are the landscapes that dot the memory of my childhood.
Right. Yep.
Abandoned filling stations, rundown motels, because these were the desert cities that we would pass through to and from, you know, in between where we would go in the summertime and then going back home. So there's a great deal of sense memory in Jason's work for me personally.
Yep.
And he just he does a great job with it. Most of it is large format, 4x5, but almost all of it is film. He's got a book out. I think he's working on his second book, which I'm kind of excited about because I didn't get the first one. It sold out very quickly.
It's also a Squarespace site.
Yeah. You can buy prints. Jason has prints, and I think they're a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, they're not that bad. They are perfectly within range.
Yeah, definitely within range. And, you know, he's on Instagram showing a little bit of process and a little bit of BTS when he goes out. And the thing that I one of the things that I really like about his work is the way he seems to approach it. He packs all of his gear into his, you know, old pickup truck with a camper shell on it. And goes and drives and just sees what he sees.
I'd be interested to see how he fits this into his life. Does he do this when he's not working as an actor, Does he make a point of doing this even when he is working as an actor? Is it a daily thing, or is it when he has the time, or you know what I mean? Like, does he carve it out, or is it part of his everyday, you know?
Right.
Just interesting, because for a guy who does so many things, I just think that would be interesting to kind of figure out how he sees the world. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, another actor that integrates a lot of photography into his work is Adam Goldberg.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
sure.
I have not listened to this, but he is on a recent episode, Jason, not Adam, on a recent episode of the Kodak podcast, The Kodakery, dumb name.
The Kodakery.
Come on.
I think it's cute.
Come on.
Wait, do you think they're saying Kodakery is in the drink, or do you just think that they...
That's the part that I have a problem. That's the part. Okay. I don't know.
See, I never really thought... I never heard it that way. Or rather, I never thought about it until you were just saying it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, anyway, he's been making the rounds. You can go on to the publications link on his website, and he was on Matt Day's podcast, and he was on the Kodakery podcast.
About a month ago.
Yeah.
I'll put a link to that show in the show notes, straight to the SoundCloud.
Yeah, I wish that I had gotten in on his book for Refueled, but they only made, I think, a couple hundred copies maybe.
Sure.
But if anybody has one and they, you know, they want to just send it to me, that'd be cool.
Yeah, just, you know, if you've got stuff, just give it to Jeffrey.
It is my birthday this month, after all.
If you have money, just send it to Jeffrey.
Right.
Anything you have you don't want, send it to Jeffrey.
You know what? This is a big birthday, so I'm taking advantage of it.
What are you turning now?
50.
50. You're going to be 50 in a few days? Holy
On the 21st.
Cow. Wow. Yep,
on the 21st. 50, my friend.
How's that feel?
Excellent.
Hmm.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to 50, actually.
It's going to be amazing. Come on. And then our anniversary is on the 7th.
Yeah.
A year already. Can you believe that? I mean, come on. It has flown by.
Oh, it's only been a year? I guess so, because it's only been like a couple of years that I'm officially married. Yeah.
7-7.
Whew. 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days. It's going to be amazing. We're going kayaking. Moonlight kayaking.
Moonlight kayaking?
Yeah.
Exciting.
Right?
Yeah. You could probably find a place to go tubing down there, too.
You know, some friends of ours just, they went tubing on some local river. You'll have to forgive me because I don't really know all of these areas.
It's called the Potomac.
No, it's not the Potomac. I know that one, but it's some other one. And they said it was just a blast. So, yeah, so we're going kayaking and then, you know, 1 year. Can't believe it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a good year.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, Jason Lee.
Jason Lee
filmphotography.com.
I'm going to go listen to that podcast right now.
Yeah, I am too. I've heard him speak about photography and about his work in the past. And again, I like his approach. This is something that is seemingly very close to his heart, not some, you know... He's not just doing it because he's bored. He really is interested in the process and in the gear and in the results and in the material. He seems to have a respect for the materials that he uses, and I like that.
Yep, yep. I'm with you. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yes.
You should try to get a hold of him and interview him.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I wouldn't mind it, but I would like to wait for a while since he's kind of made the rounds.
Okay.
You know, let some of that kind of wear off.
It's too hot for you.
Well, he's talked about the things that he's working on, and you can go listen to those other conversations, and I'm sure they're terrific. Right. So, you know, maybe do something in 6 months' time or something when the new book comes out, when there is something other than what he's talked about on the last three shows to talk about.
Yep. I got you.
I want to respect his willingness to talk about what interests him and not have to talk about kind of the same things over. How'd you get into photography? How long have you been skateboarding?
Picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah.
If you'd like to get a hold of us, 347-687-9411. podcast@ontakingpictures.com.
Yes.
At Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris, at on Instagram and Twitter, and what else? If you'd like
Wadman365.
Wadman365 on Instagram. And yeah, if you'd like to send Jeffrey your Jason Lee book, he has a...
make that happen. Call Jason. Hi, Jason. I know he listens. How are you, buddy?
Yeah. Make that happen, yeah. And if you'd like to send him Brooklyn Beckham's new book, What I See, could do that too.
Wise guy. I did get myself a de Kooning book.
Oh, you did you?
Yeah.
You know what? If you had to give me what field is that? That's
art.
Painting. No, I mean what school of painting is the abstract expressionism? If I had to choose one, I think de Kooning's my man.
Yeah, this one is it's called A Way of Living, and it was produced by a woman named Judith Zilzer, who is like the de Kooning expert at the Hirshhorn.
Okay.
So she's got her finger on the pulse of what's going on with him. And it seems like it's a pretty cool volume. It looks like it's beautifully designed. Another Fiden book. I mean, Fiden produces really, really nice stuff. So not surprisingly, this will be pretty good. And I think I don't remember how many pages it is, but it's pretty good size.
Yep. Yeah. I'll have to check that out. De Kooning book.
Yeah.
Is it for sale on Amazon? Who's it by again?
Yeah, you can give me the Fiden. Name. Fiden. You can get it on Amazon. There's also another one that looks good that I don't have. It's called De Kooning, A Retrospective. And that looks really good as well. So.
All right. Oh, I see that one. What's the one, American Master? What's yours called?
It's called A Way of Living.
A Way of Living. Sorry.
Missed yeah.
That. Okay.
It's got kind of a bluish cover.
All right. I will check it out.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Yep. Got it. $48.
Yeah, not bad.
$48.
$48.
Dollars. All right,
kids. It's hope you've enjoyed yourselves.
I know. We'll see you in less than 7 days because
yeah. Thank you for listening and listening a day late.
Yeah, and if you were waiting for the show yesterday, you were doing Independence Day wrong. Go eat a hot dog.
Wow. Okay, Judge Judy.
We'll see you later, Jeffrey.
All right. See ya. Bye. Have a good week, everyone. Bye.
So long, to any fool it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say, though I know your words will lay me out. So I can the way I have for too long. It's clear to me the way you see me is wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say, I know what you will say.
Was I recording? Oh, yeah, I was.